pausing her inspection of my tattoo. It doesn't hurt, does it? I release a laugh because her hands on me are the opposite of pain. No, Charlie, it doesn't hurt. My eyes meet hers in the mirror, and she stares at me for several seconds. When what she's doing to me finally registers, she glances away and pulls her hand from my back. Her cheeks flush. Put your shirt on and go wait for our food, she demands. I have to pee. I release my grip on the counter and inhale deeply as I pull my shirt back over my head. On my walk back to our table, I realize I never even asked her what the tattoo was. A strand of pearls, she says as she slides into the booth. Black pearls. It's about 6 inches in diameter. Pearls? She nods. Like a necklace? She nods again and takes a sip of her drink. You have a tattoo of a woman's necklace on your back, Silas. She's smiling now. Very lumberjack-esque. She's enjoying this. Yeah, well, you have trees on your back. Not much to brag about. You'll probably get termites. She laughs out loud, and it makes me laugh, too. She moves the straw around in her drink and looks down at her glass. Knowing me, she pauses. Knowing Charlie, she wouldn't have gotten a tattoo unless it really meant something to her. It had to be something she knew she would never grow tired of, never stop loving. Two familiar words stick out in her sentence. Never, never, I whisper. She looks up at me, recognizing the phrase we repeated to each other in the video. She tilts her head to the side. You think it had something to do with you? With Silas? She shakes her head, silently disagreeing with my suggestion, but I begin scrolling through my phone. Charlie wouldn't be that stupid, she adds. She wouldn't ink something into her skin that was related to a guy. Besides, what would trees have to do with you? I find exactly what I'm looking for, and as much as I'm trying to keep a straight face, I can't stop the smile. I know it's a smug smile, and I probably should not be looking at her like this, but I can't help it. I hand her the phone, and she looks down at the screen and reads out loud. From a Greek name meaning forests or woods, she looks up at me. So, it's the meaning of a name. I nod, still smug. Scroll up. She scrolls up the screen with a swipe of her finger, and her lips part with a gasp. Derived from the Greek term, Silas. Her mouth clamps shut and her jaw hardens. She hands me back the phone and closes her eyes. Her head moves slowly back and forth. She got a tattoo of the meaning of your name? As expected, she's pretending to be disappointed in herself. As expected, I feel triumphant. You got a tattoo, I tell her, pointing my finger in her direction. It's on you, your skin, my name. I can't stop with the stupid smile plastered across my face. She rolls her eyes again just as our food is laid in front of us. I push mine aside and search the meaning for the name Charlie. I don't pull anything up that could mean pearls. After a few minutes, she finally sighs and says, Try Margaret, my middle name. I search the name Margaret and read the results out loud. Margaret, from the Greek term meaning pearl. I set my phone down. I don't know why it seems like I've just won a bet, but I feel victorious. It's a good thing you're giving me a new name, she says, matter of fact. A new name, my ass. I pull my plate in front of me and pick up a French fry. I point it at her and wink. We're branded, you and me. We are so in love, Charlie. You feeling it yet? Do I make your heart go pitter-patter? These aren't our tattoos, she says. I shake my head. Branded, I repeat. I raise my index finger as if I'm gesturing over her shoulder. Right there. Permanently. Forever. God, she groans. Shut up and eat your damn burger. I eat it. I eat the entire thing with a shit-eating grin. What now? I ask, leaning back in my seat. She's barely touched her food, and I'm pretty sure I just broke a record with how fast I ate mine. She looks up at me, and I can see by the trepidation in her expression that she already knows what she wants to do next. She just doesn't want to bring it up. What is it? Her eyes narrow. I don't want you to make a smart-ass comment in response to what I'm about to suggest. No, Charlie, I say immediately. We aren't eloping tonight. The tattoos are enough commitment for now. She doesn't roll her eyes at my joke this time. She sighs, defeated, and leans back in her seat. I hate her reaction. I like it a whole lot more when she rolls her eyes at me. I reach across the table and cover her hand with mine, rubbing my thumb over hers. I'm sorry, I say. Sarcasm just makes this whole thing feel a little less frightening. I remove my hand from hers. What did you want to say? I'm listening, promise. Lumberjack's honor. She laughs with a small roll of her eyes, and I'm relieved. She glances up at me and shifts in her seat, then begins playing with her straw again. We passed a few tarot shops. I think maybe we should get a reading. I don't even start at her comment. I just nod and pull my wallet out of my pocket. I lay enough money on the table to cover our bill, and then I stand up. I agree, I tell her, reaching out for her hand. I actually don't agree, but I feel bad. These last 2 days have been exhausting, and I know she's tired. The least I can do is make this easier for her, despite knowing this hocus-pocus bullshit isn't going to enlighten us in any way. We pass a few tarot shops during our search, but Charlie shakes her head each time I point one out. I'm not sure what she's looking for, but I actually like walking the streets with her, so I'm not complaining. She's holding my hand, and sometimes I put my arm around her and pull her against me when the paths become too narrow. I don't know if she's noticed, but I've been leading us through a lot of these narrow paths unnecessarily. Anytime I see a big crowd, I aim for it. After all, she's still my backup plan. After about half an hour longer of walking, it looks like we're reaching the end of the French Quarter. The crowds are dwindling, giving me fewer excuses to pull her to me. Some of the shops we're passing have already closed. We make it to St. Philip Street when she pauses in front of an art gallery window. I stand next to her and stare at the displays illuminated inside the building. There are plastic body parts suspended from the ceiling and giant metal sea life clinging to the walls. The main display, which is directly in front of us, just happens to be a small corpse, wearing a strand of pearls. She taps her finger against the glass, pointing at the corpse. Look, she says, it's me. She laughs and moves her attention to somewhere else inside the store. I'm not looking at the corpse anymore. I'm not looking inside the store anymore. I'm looking at her. The lights from inside the gallery are illuminating her skin, giving her a glow that really does make her look like an angel. I want to run my hand across her back and feel for actual wings. Her eyes move from one object to another as she studies everything beyond the window. She's looking at each piece with bewilderment. I make a mental note to bring her back here when they're actually open. I can't imagine what she'd look like actually being able to touch one of the pieces. She stares into the window a few minutes longer, and I continue to stare at her, only now I've taken 2 steps and I'm standing directly behind her. I want to see her tattoo again, now that I know what it means. I wrap my hand around her hair and brush it forward over her shoulder. I half expect her to reach behind her and slap my hand away, but instead, she sucks in a quick rush of air and looks down at her feet. I smile, remembering what it felt like when she ran her fingers over my tattoo. I don't know if I make her feel the same, but she's standing still, allowing my fingers to slip inside the collar of her shirt again. I swallow what feels like 3 entire heartbeats. I wonder if she's always had this effect on me. I pull her shirt down, revealing her tattoo. A pang shoots through my stomach because I hate that we don't have this memory. I want to remember the discussion we had when we decided to make such a permanent decision. I want to remember who brought the idea up first. I want to remember what she looked like as the needle pierced her skin for the first time. I want to remember how we felt when it was over. I run my thumb over the silhouette of trees while curving the rest of my hand over her shoulder, over skin covered in chills again. She tilts her head to the side and the tiniest of whimpers escapes her throat. I squeeze my eyes shut. Charlie? My voice is like sandpaper. I clear my throat to smooth it out. I changed my mind, I say quietly. I don't want to give you a new name. I kind of love your old one now. I wait. I wait for her snarky response, for her laughter. I wait for her to push my hand away from the nape of her neck. I get no reaction from her, nothing, which means I get everything. I keep my hand on her back as I slowly step around her. I'm standing between her and the window now, but she keeps her eyes focused on the ground. She doesn't look up at me because I know she doesn't like to feel weak. And right now I'm making her weak. I bring my free hand to her chin and graze my fingers up her jaw, tilting her face to mine. When we lock eyes, I feel like I'm meeting a brand new side of her, a side of her without resolve, a vulnerable side, a side that's allowing herself to feel something. I want to grin and ask her how it feels to be in love, but I know teasing her in this moment would piss her off and she'd walk away, and I can't let that happen. Not right now. Not when I finally get to catalog an actual memory with all the numerous fantasies I've had about her mouth. Her tongue slides across her bottom lip, causing jealousy to flutter through me because I really wanted to be the one to do that to her lip. In fact, I think I will. I begin to dip my head just as she presses her hands against my forearms. "Look," she says, pointing at the building next door. The flickering light has stolen her attention, and I want to curse the universe for the simple fact that a light bulb just interfered with what was about to become my absolute favorite of very few memories. I follow her gaze to a sign that doesn't look any different from all of the other tarot signs we've passed. The only thing different about this one is it just completely ruined my moment, and damn it, it was a good moment, a great one. One I know Charlie was also feeling, and I don't know how long it'll take me to get back to that. She's walking in the direction of the shop now. I follow behind her like a lovesick puppy. The building is unmarked, and it makes me wonder what it was about the unreliable asshole lighting that drew her away from my mouth. The only words indicating this is even a store are the no camera signs plastered on every blackened window. Charlie puts her hands on the door and pushes it open. I follow her inside, and we're soon standing in what looks like the center of a touristy voodoo gift shop. There's a man standing behind a register and a few people browsing the aisles. I try to take everything in as I follow Charlie through the store. She fingers everything, touching the stones, the bones, the jars of miniature voodoo dolls. We silently make our way down each aisle until we reach the back wall. Charlie stops short, grabs my hand, and points at a picture on the wall. "That gate!" she says. "You took a picture of that gate. It's the one hanging on my wall."
"Can I help you?"
We both spin around, and a large, really large man with gauged ears and a lip ring is staring down at us. I kind of want to apologize to him and leave as fast as we can, but Charlie has other plans. "Do you know what this gate is guarding, the one in the picture?" Charlie asks him, pointing over her shoulder. The man's eyes lift to the picture frame. He shrugs.
"Must be new," he says. "I've never noticed it before."
He looks at me, arching an eyebrow adorned with multiple piercings, one being a small bone? Is that a bone sticking through his eyebrow?
"You two looking for anything in particular?"
I shake my head and begin to respond, but my words are cut off by someone else's.
"They're here to see me."
A hand reaches through a beaded curtain to our right. A woman steps out, and Charlie immediately sidles against me. I wrap my arm around her. I don't know why she's allowing this place to freak her out. She doesn't seem like the type to believe in this sort of thing, but I'm not complaining. A frightened Charlie means a very lucky Silas.
"This way," the woman says, motioning for us to follow her.
I start to object, but then remind myself that places like this, they're all about theatrics. It's Halloween 365 days a year. She's just playing a part. She's no different than Charlie and me, pretending to be two people we aren't. Charlie glances up at me, silently asking for permission to follow her. I nod, and we follow the woman through the curtain of... I touch one of the beads and take a closer look. Plastic skulls. Nice touch. The room is small, and every wall is covered with thick, velvet black curtains. There are candles lit around the room, flickers of light licking the walls, the floor, us. The woman takes a seat at a small table in the center of the room for us to sit in the two chairs across from her. I keep Charlie's hand wrapped tightly in mine as we both sit. The woman begins to slowly shuffle a deck of tarot cards.
A joint reading, I assume, she asks.
We both nod. She hands Charlie the deck and asks her to hold them. Charlie takes them from her and clasps her hands around them. The woman nudges her head toward me.
Both of you, hold them.
I want to roll my eyes, but instead I reach my hand across Charlie and place it on the deck with her.
You need to want the same thing out of this reading. Multiple readings can sometimes overlap when there isn't cohesiveness. It's important your goal is the same.
Charlie nods. They are. It is. I hate the desperation in her voice, like we're actually going to get an answer. Surely she doesn't believe this. The woman reaches across to take the cards from our hands. Her fingers brush mine and they're ice cold. I pull my hand back and grab Charlie's, moving it onto my lap. She begins laying cards out on the table, one by one. They're all face down. When she's finished, she asks me to pull a card from the deck. When I hand her the card, she sets it apart from the others. She points at it.
This card will give you your answer, but the other cards explain the path to your question.
She puts her fingers on the card in the middle.
This position represents your current situation.
She flips it over.
Death?
Charlie whispers. Her hand tightens around mine. The woman looks at Charlie and tilts her head.
It isn't necessarily a bad thing, she says. The death card represents a major change, a reformation. The two of you have experienced a loss of sorts.
She touches another card.
This position represents the immediate past.
She flips it over, and before I look down at the card, I can see the woman's eyes narrow. My eyes fall to the card. The devil.
This indicates something or someone was enslaving you in the past. It could represent a number of things close to you. Parental influence. An unhealthy relationship.
Her eyes meet mine.
Inverted cards reflect a negative influence, and although it represents the past, it can also signify something you're currently transitioning through.
Her fingers fall to another card.
This card represents your immediate future.
She slides the card toward her and flips it over. A quiet gasp falls from her mouth, and I feel Charlie flinch. I glance down at her and she's staring intently at the woman, waiting for an explanation. She looks terrified. I don't know what kind of game this woman is playing, but it's beginning to piss me off.
The tower card? Charlie says. What does it mean?
The woman flips the card back over as if it's the worst card in the deck. She closes her eyes and blows out a long breath. Her eyes pop open again and she's staring right at Charlie.
It means destruction.
I roll my eyes and push back from the table. Charlie, let's get out of here. Charlie looks at me pleadingly.
We're almost finished, she says.
I relent and scoot back toward the table. The woman flips over two more cards, explaining them to Charlie, but I don't hear a single word she says. My eyes wander around the room as I try to remain patient and let her finish, but I feel like we're wasting time. Charlie's hand begins squeezing the life out of mine, so I return my attention to the reading. The woman's eyes are closed tight, and her lips are moving. She's mumbling words I can't decipher. Charlie scoots closer to me, and I instinctively wrap my arm around her. Charlie, I whisper, making her look up at me. It's theatrics. She gets paid to do this. Don't be scared. My voice must have broken the woman out of her conveniently timed trance. She's tapping the table, trying to get our attention as if she wasn't off in La La Land for the last minute and a half. Her fingers fall to the card I pulled out of the deck. Her eyes meet mine, and then they move to Charlie's.
This card,
she says slowly,
is your outcome card. Combined with the other cards in the reading, this gives you the answer to why you are here.
She flips the card over. The woman doesn't move. Her eyes are locked on the card beneath her fingertips. The room grows eerily quiet, and as if on cue, one of the candles loses its flame. Another nice touch, I think. I look down at the outcome card. There aren't any words on it. No title, no picture. The card is blank. I can feel Charlie stiffen in my arms as she stares at the blank card on the table. I shove back from the table and pull Charlie up. This is ridiculous, I say loudly, accidentally knocking my chair over. I'm not pissed that the woman is trying to scare us. It's her job. I'm pissed because she's actually scaring Charlie, yet she's keeping up this ridiculous facade. I take Charlie's face in my hands and look her in the eyes. She planted that card to scare you, Charlie. This is all bullshit. I take both her hands and begin to turn her toward the exit.
There are no blank cards in my tarot deck, the woman says.
I pause in my tracks and turn around to face her. Not because of what she said, but because of the way she said it. She sounded scared. Scared for us? I close my eyes and exhale. She's an actress, Silas. Calm your shit. I push open the door and pull Charlie outside. I don't stop walking until we're around the building and on another street. When we're away from the store and away from the damn flickering of the sign, I stop walking and pull her against me. She wraps her arms around my waist and buries her head against my chest. Forget all of that, I say, rubbing my hand in reassuring circles over her back. Fortune-telling, tarot readings, it's ridiculous, Charlie. She pulls her face from my shirt and looks up at me. Yeah, ridiculous like the both of us waking up at school with no memory of who we are. I close my eyes and pull away from her. I run my hands through her hair, the frustration from the day catching up to me. I can make light of it all with my jokes. I can dismiss her theories, from tarot readings to fairy tales, simply because it doesn't make sense to me, but she's right. None of this makes sense, and the more we try to uncover the mystery, the more I feel like we're wasting our damn time.
Chapter 13. Charlie. His lips fold in, and he shakes his head. He wants out of here. I can feel his edginess. Maybe we should go back and ask her more detailed questions, I suggest.
No way, he says. I'm not entertaining that again.
He starts to walk away, and I consider going back in there myself. I'm just about to take my first step toward the shop when the open sign in the window turns off. The shop is in sudden darkness. I chew on the inside of my cheek. I could come back when Silas isn't around. Maybe she'd talk to me more.
Charlie!
He calls. I run after him until we're walking side by side again. We can see our breath as we walk. When did it get this cold? I rub my hands together. I'm hungry, I say.
You're always hungry. I've never seen someone so small eat so much.
He doesn't offer to feed me this time, so I continue to walk beside him. What just happened back there? I ask. I'm trying to make a joke of it, but my stomach feels funny.
Someone tried to scare us. That's it.
I look up at Silas. Mostly everything together except those shoulders, which are tense. But what if she's right? What if there weren't any blank cards in her tarot deck?
No,
he says.
Just no.
I bite my lip and sidestep a man dancing backward down the sidewalk. I don't understand how you can dismiss something so easily, considering our circumstances, I say from between my teeth. Don't you think...
Why don't we talk about something else?
Silas says. Right, like what we're going to do next weekend? Or how about we talk about what we did last weekend? Or maybe we talk about... I smack my hand against my forehead. The electric crushed diner. How could I forget about that?
What?
Silas asks.
What's that?
We were there. You and me, last weekend. I found a receipt in my jeans pocket. Silas is watching me recount all of this with a look of mild annoyance on his face. I took Jeanette there for dinner last night. A server recognized me.
Hey,
he yells over my shoulder.
If you touch her with that, I'll break you in half.
I glance behind me and see a man pointing a foam finger at my butt. He backs off when he sees the look on Silas's face.
Why didn't you tell me that?
Silas says under his breath, directing his attention back to me.
That's not like tarot readers. That's something important.
I really don't know. I meant to. He grabs my hand, but this time it's not for the pleasure of our palms pressing together. He drags me down the street with one hand while typing something into his phone with the other. I'm both impressed and mildly annoyed at being spoken to like that. We may have been something in our other life, but in this life I don't even know his middle name. It's on North Rampart Street, I say helpfully.
Yeah.
He's pissed. I kind of like the emo-ness of it. We pass through a park with a fountain. Street vendors have set up their artwork along the fence. They stare at us as we pass by. Silas is taking one step to my three. I trot to keep up. We walk so far until my feet hurt, and finally I yank my hand free of his. He stops and turns around. I don't know what to say or what I'm mad at, so I place my hands on my hips and glare at him.
What's wrong with you?
He says. I don't know, I shout, but you can't just drag me around the city. I can't walk as fast as you, and my feet hurt. This feels familiar. Why does this feel familiar? He looks away, and I can see the muscles working in his jaw. He turns back to me, and everything happens quickly. He takes two steps and scoops me off my feet. Then he resumes his pace with my bouncing ever so slightly in his arms. After my initial squeal, I settle down and clasp my arms around his neck. I like it up here where I can smell his cologne and touch his skin. I don't recall seeing perfume among Charlie's things, and I doubt I would have thought to put any on. What does that say about Silas? That in the midst of all of this, he thought to pick up a bottle and spray cologne on his neck before he left the house this morning. Was he always the type of person who cared about the little things, like smelling good? As I think these thoughts, Silas stops to ask a woman who has fallen in the street if she's all right. She's drunk and sloppy. When she tries to stand up, she steps on the hem of her dress and falls back down. Silas sets me down on the sidewalk and goes to help her.
Are you bleeding? Did you hurt yourself?
He asks. He helps her stand, leads her back to where I'm waiting. She slurs her words and pats him on the cheek. And I wonder if he knew when he went to help her that she was homeless. I wouldn't touch her. She smells. I step away from both of them and watch him watch her. He's concerned. He keeps his eyes on her until she's stumbled off down the next street, and then he swings his head around to find me. In this moment, right now, it's so clear to me who Charlie is. She's not as good as Silas. She loves him because he's so different from her. Maybe that's why she went to Brian, because she couldn't live up to Silas. Like I can't. He half smiles at me, and I think he's embarrassed to be caught caring.
Ready?
I want to tell him that what he did was nice, but nice is such a silly word for kindness. Anyone could pretend to be nice. What Silas did was innate, bold-faced kindness. I haven't had any thoughts like that. I think about the girl in class the first morning who dropped her books at my feet. She looked at me with fear. She expected me not to help. And more. What else? Silas and I walk in silence. He checks his phone every few minutes to make sure we're headed in the right direction. And I check his face. I wonder if this is what a crush feels like. if watching a man help a woman is supposed to elicit these types of feelings. And then we're here. He points across the street, and I nod. Yeah, that's it. But it's almost not. The diner has transformed since I was here with Jeanette. It's loud and pumping. There are men lined up on the sidewalk smoking. They part for us as we walk by. I can feel the bass in my ankles as we stand outside the doors. They open for us as a group leaves. A girl walks past me laughing, her pink fur jacket brushing against my face. Inside, people are defending their space with widened elbows and jutted hips. People glare at us as we walk by. This is my space. Back off. I'm waiting for the rest of my group. Keep moving. We bypass the few empty seats in favor of walking deeper into the building. We press through the crowd, walking sideways, and flinching when raucous laughter erupts next to us. A drink spills on my shoes. Someone says sorry. I don't even know who because it's so dark. And then someone calls our names. Silas! Charlie! Over here! A boy and... who was that girl who picked me up this morning? Annie? Amy? Hey! She says as we draw close. I can't believe you actually came back here after last weekend.
Why wouldn't we?
Silas asks. I take the seat I am offered and stare up at the three of them.
You punch a guy, throw over a couple of tables, and wonder why you shouldn't come back,
the boy says, along with a laugh. I think he's Annie slash Amy's boyfriend, by the way he looks at her. Like they're in on something together. Life, maybe. It's how Silas and I look at each other. Except we really are in on something together. You acted like an ass, she says.
Amy,
the spare boy says.
Don't.
Amy. I want to know more about this person Silas punched. He deserved it, I say. Amy raises her eyebrows and shakes her head. Whatever she's thinking, she's too afraid to say it, because she turns away. I try her boyfriend next. Don't you think so? I ask innocent-like. He shrugs, goes to sit next to Amy. They're all scared of me, I think. But why? I order a Coke. Amy's head snaps around to look at me when she hears.
Regular Coke, not diet?
Do I look like I need to drink diet? I snap. She shrinks back. I don't know where that came from. Honest to God. I don't even know how much I weigh. I decide to shut up and let Silas do the detective work before I offend someone again. He drops down next to Amy's boyfriend, and they begin to talk. The music makes it impossible to eavesdrop, and Amy is doing her best not to look at me. So I people watch. People. They all have memories. Know who they are. I'm jealous.
Let's go, Charlie.
Silas is standing above me, waiting. Amy and her boyfriend are watching us from across the table. It's a big table. I wonder who else is coming to join them, and how many of those people hate me. Out of the restaurant and back onto the street. Silas clears his throat.
I got into a fight.
I heard, I say. Did they tell you who it was?
Yeah.
I wait, and when he doesn't offer the information, I say, well?
I punched the owner in the face. Brian's father.
My head snaps around. What the hell?
Yeah,
he says. He rubs the scruff on his chin thoughtfully.
Because he said something about you.
Me? I get a sick feeling in my stomach. I know what's coming, but I don't know what's coming.
He told me he was giving you a job as a waitress.
Okay, that's not so bad. We need the money.
Because you were Brian's girl. So I punched him, I guess.
Damn.
Yeah. That kid Eller told me we needed to leave before Brian's dad called the cops.
The cops? I echo.
I guess Brian's dad and my dad have worked together on some stuff. He agreed not to press charges last week because of it, but I'm not supposed to go back there. Also, Landon has been calling around looking for me. Apparently my dad is wondering why I left practice. Everyone's pretty pissed about that.
Oops, I say.
Yeah, oops.
He says it like he doesn't care. We go back the way we came, both of us quiet. We pass a few street artists I didn't notice before. Two of them look like a couple. The man is playing the bagpipes while the woman draws pictures in colored chalk on the sidewalk. We step over the drawings, both of our heads down, examining. Silas takes out his camera and snaps a few pictures, while I watch her turn a few lines into a couple kissing. A couple kissing. That reminds me. We need to kiss, I say to him. He almost drops his phone. His eyes are big when he looks at me. To see if something happens, like in the fairy tales we talked about.
Oh,
he says.
Yeah, sure, okay. Where, now?
I roll my eyes and walk away from him, toward a fountain near a church. Silas follows behind. I want to see his face, but I don't look. This is all business. I can't make it into something else. It's an experiment. That's it. When we reach the fountain, we both sit down on the rim of it. I don't want to do it this way, so I stand up and face him. Okay, I say, coming to stand in front of him. Close your eyes. He does, but there's a grin on his face. Keep them closed, I instruct. I don't want him to see me. I barely know what I look like. I don't know if my face contorts under pressure. His head is tilted up, and mine is tilted down. I put my hands on his shoulders and feel his hands lift to my waist as he pulls me closer, between his knees. His hands slide up without warning, his thumbs grazing my stomach, and then making a quick swipe along the underside of my bra. My stomach clenches.
Sorry, he says. I can't see what I'm doing.
I smirk this time, and I'm glad he can't see my reaction right now. Put your hands back on my waist, I command. He puts them too low, and now his palms are on my ass. He squeezes a little, and I smack his arm.
What? He laughs. I can't see.
Up, I say. He slides them a little higher, but slowly. I tingle down to my toes. Higher, I say again. He takes them up a quarter of an inch.
Is this?
Before he can finish his sentence, I lean my face down and kiss him. He's smiling at first, still in the middle of his little game. But when he feels my lips, his smile dissolves. His mouth is soft. I lift my hands to his face and cup it as he pulls me tighter, wrapping his arms around my backside. I'm kissing down and he's kissing up. At first, I expect to just give him a peck. That's all they ever show in the fairy tales. A quick peck and the curse is broken. We'd have gotten our memories back by now if this were going to work. The experiment should be over, but neither of us stops. He kisses with soft lips and a firm tongue. It's not sloppy or wet. It moves in and out of my mouth sensually as his lips suck softly on mine. I run my fingers up the back of his neck and into his hair. And that's when he stands, forcing me to take a step back and change position. I do a good job of hiding my gasp. Now I'm kissing up and he's kissing down. Except he's holding me to him, his arm wrapped around my waist, his free hand curled around the back of my neck. I cling to his shirt, dizzy. Soft lips, dragging, tongue between my lips, pressure on my back. Something pressing between us that makes me feel a riot of heat. I push away, gasping. I stand there looking at him, and he looking at me. Something has happened. It's not our memories that have awoken, but something else that makes us feel drunk. And it occurs to me as I stand here, wanting him to kiss me again, that this is exactly what doesn't need to happen. We're going to want more of the new us, and we'll lose focus. He slides a hand down his face, as if to sober himself up. He smiles.
I don't care what our real first kiss was,
he says.
That's the one I want to remember.
I stare at his smile long enough to remember it. And then I turn and walk away.
Charlie!
He yells. I ignore him and keep walking. That was stupid. What was I thinking? A kiss isn't going to bring our memories back. This isn't a fairy tale. He grabs my arm.
Hey, slow down.
And then, what are you thinking?
I keep walking in the direction I'm certain we came from. I'm thinking I need to get home. I have to make sure Jeanette has eaten dinner and...
About us, Charlie.
I can feel him staring at me. There is no us, I say. I bring my eyes back to his. Haven't you heard? We were obviously broken up and I was dating Brian. His dad was giving me a job.
We were an us, Charlie. And holy shit, I can see why.
I shake my head. We can't lose focus. That was your first kiss, I say. It could feel like that with anyone.
So it felt that way for you too?
He asks, running around to stand in front of me. I consider telling him the truth. That if I were dead like Snow White and he kissed me like that, surely my heart would kick back to life. That I'd be the one to slay dragons for that kiss. But we don't have time to kiss like that. We need to find out what's happened and how to reverse it. I didn't feel anything, I say. It was just a kiss, and it didn't work. A lie that burns my insides, it's so foul. I have to go.
Charlie,
I'll see you tomorrow. I lift a hand over my head and wave, because I don't want to turn around and look at him. I'm afraid. I want to be with him, but it's not a good idea. Not until we figure more of this out. I think he's going to follow me, so I wave over a cab. I open the door and look back at Silas to show him that I'm fine. He nods, and then lifts his phone to snap a picture of me. The first time she left me, he's probably thinking. He then buries his hands in his pockets and turns in the direction of his car. I wait until he's past the fountain before I lean down to speak to the driver. Sorry, I changed my mind. I slam the door and step back to the curb. I don't have money for a cab anyway. I'll go back to the diner and ask Amy for a ride. The cabbie peels off, and I duck down a different street so Silas won't see me. I need to be alone. I need to think.
Chapter 14. Silas. Another night of shitty sleep. Only this time my lack of sleep wasn't because I was worried about myself or even worried about what made Charlie and me lose our memories. My lack of sleep was strictly because I had two things on my mind: our kiss and Charlie's reaction to our kiss. I don't know why she walked away or why she preferred to take a cab over riding with me. I could tell by the way she responded during the kiss that she felt what I was feeling. Of course, it wasn't like the kisses in fairy tales that could end a curse, but I don't think either of us really expected it to. I'm not sure we really had any expectations for the kiss at all, just a little bit of hope. What I certainly didn't expect was for everything else to take a back seat once her lips pressed against mine, but that's exactly what happened. I stopped thinking about the reason we were kissing and everything we had been through all day. All I could think about was how she was clenching my shirt in her fists, pulling me closer, wanting more. I could hear the small gasps of air she was sucking in between kisses, because as soon as our mouths met, we were both breathless. And even though she stopped the kiss and stepped away, I could still see the dazed look on her face and the way her eyes lingered on my mouth. Despite all of it, though, she still turned and walked away. But if I've learned anything about Charlie in these last 2 days, it's that there's a reason for every move she makes, and it's usually a good reason, which is why I didn't try to stop her. My phone receives a text, and I almost fall as I scramble out of the shower to get it. I haven't heard from her since we parted ways last night, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't beginning to worry. My hope bleeds out of me when I see the text isn't from Charlie. It's from the kid I talked to at the diner last night, Eller. Eller, Amy wants to know if Charlie rode with you to school. She's not at home. I turn off the water, despite not having rinsed off yet. I grab a towel with one hand and respond to his text with the other. Me, no, I haven't even left my house yet. Has she tried her cell? As soon as I send the text, I dial Charlie's number and hit speaker, then set the phone down on the counter. I'm dressed by the time her voicemail picks up. Shit, I mutter as I end the call. I open the door and stop by my bedroom long enough to get into my shoes and grab my keys. I make it downstairs, but freeze before I reach the front door. There's a woman in the kitchen and she isn't Ezra.
Mom?
The word comes out of my mouth before I realize I'm even speaking. She spins around, and even though I only recognize her from the pictures on the wall, I think I might feel something. I don't know what it is. It's not love or recognition. I'm just overcome with a sense of calmness. No, it's comfort. That's what I feel.
Hey, sweetie,
she says with a bright smile that reaches the corners of her eyes. She's preparing breakfast, or maybe she's cleaning after just finishing up breakfast.
Did you see the mail I put on your dresser yesterday? And how are you feeling?
Landon looks more like her than I do. His jaw is soft like hers. Mine is harsh like my father's. Landon carries himself like she does too, like life has been good to them. She tilts her head and then closes the distance between us.
Silas, are you okay?
I take a step back when she tries to touch her hand to my forehead. I'm fine. She tucks her hand to her chest like it offends her that I backed away.
Oh, she says. Okay, well, good. You already missed school this week and you have a game tonight.
She walks back into the kitchen.
You shouldn't stay out so late when you're sick.
I stare at the back of her head, wondering why she would say that. This is the first time I've even seen her since all of this started. Ezra or my father must have told her about Charlie being here. I wonder if Charlie being here upset her. I wonder if she and my father share the same opinion of Charlie. I feel fine now, I reply. I was with Charlie last night, that's why I was home late. She doesn't react to my baited comment. She doesn't even look at me. I wait a few more seconds to see if she's going to respond. When she doesn't, I turn and head for the front door. Landon is in the front seat already when I reach the car. I open the back door and throw my backpack inside. When I open the front, he reaches his hand out to me. This was ringing. Found it under your seat. I take the phone from him. It's Charlie's. She left her phone in my car? Landon shrugs. I stare at the screen, and there are several missed calls and texts. I see Brian's name along with Amy's. I try to open them, but I'm prompted for a password.
Get in the damn car, we're already late.
I climb inside and set Charlie's phone on the console while I back out. When I pick it back up again to try and figure out the password, Landon snatches it out of my hands.
Did you not learn anything from your fender bender last year?
He slaps the phone back down on the console. I'm uneasy. I don't like that Charlie doesn't have her phone with her. I don't like that she didn't ride to school with Amy. If she already left her house before Amy got there, who did she ride to school with? I'm not sure how I'll react if I find out she caught a ride with Brian. I mean this in the nicest way possible, Landon says. I glance over at him, at the cautious look on his face. But is Charlie pregnant? I slam on my brakes. Luckily, there's a light in front of us that turns red, so my reaction appears intentional. Pregnant? Why? Why would you ask that? Did you hear that from someone? Landon shakes his head.
No, it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what the hell is going on with you. And that seemed like the only justifiable answer.
I missed practice yesterday, so you assume it's because Charlie is pregnant? Landon laughs under his breath.
It's more than just that, Silas. It's everything. You fighting with Brian, the practices you've missed all week, you ditching school half a day Monday, all day Tuesday, half a day Wednesday. It's not like you.
I ditched school this week?
Also, you and Charlie have been acting strange when you're together, not like your usual selves. You forgot to pick me up after school. You stayed out past curfew on a school night. You've been really off this week, and I don't know if you want to tell me what the hell is going on, but it's really starting to worry me.
I watch as the disappointment fills his eyes. We were close. He's definitely a good brother, I can tell. He's used to knowing all my secrets, all my thoughts. I wonder if these rides to and from school are when we normally share them. I wonder if I were to tell him what I'm really thinking, if he would even believe me. The light's green, he says, facing forward. I begin driving again, but I don't share any secrets with him. I don't know what to say, or how to even begin telling him the truth. I just know I don't want to lie to him because that doesn't seem like something the old Silas would do. When I pull into a parking spot,
He opens his door and gets out. "Landon," I say before he shuts the door. He leans down and looks at me. "I'm sorry, I'm just having an off week." He nods thoughtfully and turns his attention toward the school. He works his jaw back and forth and then locks eyes with me again. "Hopefully your week is back on before the game tonight," he says. "You have a lot of pissed off teammates right now." He slams the door and begins walking in the direction of the school. I grab Charlie's phone and head inside. I couldn't find her in the halls, so I went to my first two classes. I'm headed to my third now, still with no word from her. I'm sure she just slept late, and I'll see her when we have class together fourth period, but still, something doesn't feel right. Everything feels off. She could just be avoiding me, but that doesn't seem like something she would do. She wouldn't go out of her way to let me know she doesn't want to speak to me. She'd throw it in my face. I go to my locker to find my third period math book. I would check her locker to see if any of her textbooks are missing, but I don't know the combination to her lock. It was written on her schedule, but I gave that to her yesterday. "Silas!" I turn around to see Andrew fighting his way through the crowded hallway like a fish swimming upstream. He finally gives up and yells, "Jeanette wants you to call her." He turns and heads in the opposite direction. "Jeanette, Jeanette, Jeanette. Charlie's sister." I find her name in the contacts on my phone. She answers on the first ring.
"Silas?"
she says. "Yeah, it's me."
"Is Charlie with you?"
I close my eyes, feeling the panic begin to settle in the pit of my stomach. "No," I reply. "She didn't come home last night?"
"No,"
Jeanette says.
"I normally wouldn't be worried, but she usually tells me if she's not coming home. She never called, and now she's not responding to my texts."
"I have her phone."
"Why do you have her phone?"
"She left it in my car," I say. I close my locker and begin to head toward the exit. "We got into an argument last night and she got in a cab. I thought she was going straight home." I stop walking when it hits me. She didn't have lunch money yesterday, which means she wouldn't have had cab fare last night. "I'm leaving school," I tell Jeanette. "I'll find her." I hang up before I even give her a chance to respond. I sprint down the hallway toward the door that leads to the parking lot, but as soon as I round the corner, I stop short. Avril. Shit, now is not the time for this. I try to duck my head and walk past her, but she grabs the sleeve of my shirt. I stop walking and face her. "Avril, I can't right now." I point to the exit. "I need to leave, kind of an emergency." She releases my shirt and folds her arm over her chest.
"You never showed up during lunch yesterday. Thought maybe you were running late, but when I checked the cafeteria, you were there. With her."
Christ, I don't have time for this. In fact, I think I'll save myself any future trouble and just end it now. I sigh and run a hand through my hair. "Yeah," I say. "Charlie and I, we decided to work things out." Avril tilts her head and shoots me an incredulous look.
"No, Silas, that isn't what you want. And it's definitely not going to work for me."
I look left, down the hall, and then right. When I see no one's around, I take a step toward her.
"Listen, Ms. Ashley," I say, taking care to address her professionally. I look her directly in the eyes. "I don't think you're in any position to tell me how things are going to be between the two of us."
Her eyes immediately narrow. She stands silently for several seconds as though she's waiting for me to laugh and tell her I'm only kidding. When I don't falter, she huffs and shoves her hands against my chest, pushing me out of the way. The click of her heels begins to fade the further I sprint away from her, toward the exit. I'm knocking for a third time on Charlie's front door when it finally flies open. Her mother is standing in front of me, wild hair, wilder eyes. It's as if hatred spews from her soul the moment she realizes I'm standing here.
"What do you want?"
she spits. I try to glance past her to get a look inside the house. She moves to block my view, so I point over her shoulder. "I need to talk to Charlie. Is she here?" Her mother takes a step outside and pulls the door shut behind her so that I can't see inside at all.
"That's none of your business," she hisses. "Get the hell off my property."
Is she here or not?
She folds her arms over her chest.
If you aren't out of my driveway in 5 seconds, I'm calling the police.
I throw my hands up in defeat and groan. I'm worried about your daughter, so can you please put your anger aside for 1 minute and tell me if she's inside? She takes 2 quick steps toward me and pokes a finger into my chest.
Don't you dare raise your voice at me.
Jesus Christ. I push past her and kick open the door. The first thing I'm hit with is the smell. The air is stale. A fog of thick cigarette smoke fills the air and assaults my lungs. I hold my breath as I make my way through the living room. There's a bottle of whiskey open on the bar, sitting next to an empty glass. Mail is scattered across the table, what looks like several days' worth. It's like this woman doesn't even care enough to open any of it. The envelope on the top of the stack is addressed to Charlie. I move to pick it up, but hear the woman stalking into the house behind me. I make my way down the hall and see 2 doors to my right and 1 on the left. I push open the door to my left just as Charlie's mother begins screaming from behind me. I ignore her and make my way into the bedroom. Charlie! I yell. I glance around the room, knowing she isn't here, but still hoping I'm wrong. If she isn't here, I don't know where else to look. I don't remember any of the places we used to hang out. But neither would Charlie, I guess. Silas! Her mother yells from the doorway to the bedroom. Get out! I'm calling the police! She disappears from the doorway, probably to retrieve a phone. I continue my search for... I don't even know. Charlie obviously isn't here, but I keep looking around anyway, hoping to find something that could help. I know which side of the room is Charlie's because of the picture of the gate above her bed, the one she said I took. I look around for clues, but find nothing. I remember her mentioning something about an attic in her closet, so I check the closet. There's a small hole at the top of it. It looks like she uses her shelves as steps. Charlie! I call out. Nothing. Charlie, are you up there? Just as I check the sturdiness of the bottom shelf with my foot, something slams against the side of my head. I turn, but immediately duck again when I see a plate fly out of the woman's hand. It crashes against the wall next to my head. Get out! She screams. She's looking for more things to throw, so I put my hands up and surrender. I'm leaving, I tell her. I'll leave. She moves out of the doorway to let me pass. She's still yelling as I make my way down the hall. As I walk toward the front door, I swipe the letter off the bar that was addressed to Charlie. I don't even bother telling Charlie's mother to have her call me if she makes it home. I get in my car and pull back onto the street. Where the hell is she? I wait until I'm a few miles away and then I pull over to check her phone again. Landon mentioned he heard it ringing under the seat, so I lean over and reach my hand beneath the seat. I pull out an empty soda can, a shoe, and then finally, her wallet. I open it and sift through it, but find nothing I don't already know. She's somewhere out there, without her phone or her wallet. She doesn't have anyone's numbers memorized. If she didn't come home, where would she have gone? I punch the steering wheel. Damn it, Silas! I should have never let her leave by herself. This is all my fault. My phone receives an incoming text. The text is from Landon, wondering why I left school. I drop the phone back onto the seat and notice the letter I stole from Charlie's house. There's no return address. The date stamp in the top corner is from Tuesday, the day before all of this happened. I open the envelope and find several pages inside, folded together. Across the front, it reads, "Open immediately." I unfold the pages and my eyes instantly fall to the 2 names written at the top of the page. Charlie and Silas. It's addressed to both of us? I keep reading. If you don't know why you're reading this, then you've forgotten everything. You recognize no one, not even yourselves. Please don't panic and read this letter in its entirety. We will share everything we know, which right now isn't much. What the hell? My hands begin to shake as I continue reading. We aren't sure what happened, but we're afraid if we don't write it down, it might happen again. At least with everything written down and left in more than one place, we'll be more prepared if it does happen again. On the following pages, you'll find all the information we know. Maybe it will help in some way. Charlie and Silas.
I stare at the names at the bottom of the page until my vision is blurry. I look at the names at the top of the page again, Charlie and Silas. I look at the names at the bottom, Charlie and Silas. We wrote ourselves a letter? It makes no sense. If we wrote ourselves a letter... I immediately flip to the pages that follow. The first two pages are things I already know. Our addresses, our phone numbers, where we go to school, what our classes are, our siblings' names, our parents' names. I read through it all as fast as I possibly can. My hands are shaking so badly by the third page I can hardly read the handwriting. I set the page in my lap to finish. It's more personal information. A list of things we've figured out about one another already, our relationship, how long we've been together. The letter mentions Brian's name as someone who keeps texting Charlie. I skip over all the familiar information until I get close to the end of the third page. The first memories either of us can recall are from Saturday, October 4th, around 11 a.m. Today is Sunday, October 5th. We're going to make a copy of this letter for ourselves, but we'll also mail copies in the morning just to be safe. I flip to the fourth page and it's dated Tuesday, October 7th. It happened again. This time, it happened during history class on Monday, October 6th. It appears to have happened at the same time of day, 48 hours later. We don't have anything new to add to the letter. We both did our best to stay away from friends and family the past day, faking illnesses. We've been calling one another with any information we know, but so far it seems this has happened twice. The first time being Saturday, the second being Monday. Wish we had more information, but we're still kind of freaked out that this is happening and aren't sure what to do about it. We'll do what we did last time and mail copies of this letter to ourselves. Also, there will be a copy in the glove box of Silas's car. That's the first place we looked this time, so there's a good chance you'll look there again. I never checked the glove box. We'll keep the original letters somewhere safe so no one will find them. We're afraid if anyone sees the letters, or if anyone suspects anything, they'll think we're going crazy. Everything will be in a box on the back of the third shelf of Silas's bedroom closet. If this pattern continues, there's a chance it could happen again on Wednesday at the same time. In case it does, this letter should arrive to both of you that day. I look at the timestamp on the envelope again. It was mailed first thing Tuesday morning, and Wednesday at 11 a.m. is exactly when this happened to us. If you find anything out that will help, add it to the next page and keep this going until we figure out what started it and how to stop it. I flip to the last page, but it's blank. I look at the clock. It's 10:57 a.m. It's Friday. This happened to us almost 48 hours ago. My chest is heaving. This can't be happening. 48 hours will be up in less than 3 minutes. I flip open my console and search for a pen. I don't find one, so I yank open the glove box. Right on top is a copy of the same letter with mine and Charlie's names on it. I lift it up, and there are several pens, so I grab one and flatten the paper out against the steering wheel. "It happened again," I write. My hands are shaking so bad, I drop the pen. I pick it up again and keep writing. At 11 a.m., Wednesday, October 8th, Charlie and I both lost our memories for what appears to be the third time in a row. Things we've learned in the last 48 hours. Our fathers used to work together. Charlie's father is in prison. I'm writing as fast as I can, trying to figure out which points I need to write down first, which are the most important, because I'm almost out of time. We visited a tarot reader on St. Philip Street. That might be worth checking out again. Charlie mentioned a girl at school, called her the Shrimp, said she wanted to talk to her. Charlie has an attic in her bedroom closet. She spends a lot of time in there. I feel like I'm wasting time. I feel like I'm not adding anything of importance to this damn list. If this is true and it's about to happen again, I won't have time to mail a letter, much less make copies. Hopefully, if I have it in my hands, I'll be smart enough to read it and not just toss it aside. I bite the tip of the pen, attempting to focus on what to write next. We grew up together, but now our families hate each other. They don't want us together. Silas was sleeping with the guidance counselor, Charlie with Brian Finley. We broke it off with both of them. Landon is a good brother. You can probably trust him if you have to. I continue to write. I write about our tattoos, the Electric Crush Diner, Ezra, and anything and everything I can recall from the last 48 hours. I look at the clock, 10:59. Charlie doesn't know about this letter. If everything in this letter so far is accurate and this really has been happening to us since last Saturday, that means she's about to forget everything she's learned in the past 48 hours. And I have no idea how to find her, how to warn her. I press the pen to the paper again and write one last thing. Charlie got into a cab on Bourbon Street last night, and no one has seen her since. She doesn't know about this letter. Find her. The first thing you need to do is find her. Please. To be continued.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Never Never Part 1, written by Taryn Fisher and Colleen Hoover. Performed by Elizabeth Evans and Kevin Free. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2015 by Colleen Hoover and Taryn Fisher. Production copyright 2015 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.